Welcome to the Portland Music Insider. You are listening to an interview with Ben Rice and the PDX Hustle, recorded live July 8, 2025, at the Newburgh Tunes on Tuesday event. Today is Tuesday, July 8, 2025. My name is Robert Davis. For the audience today, we welcome you to the very first episode of Portland Music Insider. I'm 25-year sound engineer, lighting engineer. I own my own sound company for years called AAA Sound Company, and now I'm doing live events as an engineer and a radio personality for the nonprofit radio station in Portland, Oregon, called KBOO Radio. I also introduce myself as a longtime friend of Michael LeClaire, who is sitting here with us today. With me today on the microphone is Ben Rice. Say hello, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Oh, man. Hey, it's my pleasure. And Michael LeClaire. Say hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Michael LeClaire is my co-host and compadre for Portland Music Insider. Michael will be with me on every interview that we do for KBOO as the Portland Music Insider. Currently, we're sitting in the park in Newburgh and have just finished listening to Ben Rice and his band for several hours at the park. As always, Ben Rice, the PDX Hustle, rocked the house. And you did, buddy.
Thanks. It's a hometown crowd, you know. It's it's always a good time. And it's actually right on the steps of my elementary school that I went to when I was...
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll get into that in just a few minutes. His fabulous, very tight horn section, guitar, and many other instruments make up his fabulous band, and I'm talking fabulous. I met Ben Rice for the first time at the Portland, Oregon Blues Festival this past Saturday, July 5th, 2025. I introduced myself as the engineer for the radio station KBOO, who will be engineering around simulcast from about 6 p.m. till 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday night. I could not help but notice how you were dressed, Ben. I looked down at your feet and saw those custom black cowboy boots. And you were putting on your black belt with the silver conchos on it. So, Ben, welcome to our show and the very first. And you are the first, buddy.
What an honor. This is very cool, very cool.
Let me ask you, how was the gig at the Portland, Oregon Blues Festival this past Saturday?
It was wonderful. Yeah, we had such a great time. The weather was perfect. The bands were perfect. I've always really liked the talent that they bring to the festival. And it's an honor to be part of the lineup, too. Part next to some of my heroes, Norman Sylvester was there. Lloyd Jones was there. Earl Thomas and the Pain were there.
I'm nodding.
Those are front people, but also, you know, the side people. Dave Call was there. Steve Cairn was there. My friend Joe Conrad was there with the Etta James tribute. Ed Pierce with Rhonda Steele and Arietta Ward. Just in my mind, I could just go on.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. Well, you're in the business and have been, and we'll get into that too when Michael interviews you here in just a minute. But let me ask you. I know based on what you said, you had a good time. Mm-hmm. So here in the city of Newburgh at the Newburgh Tunes on Tuesday event, did you have a good time?
I had a lot of fun. It was great. I think partially too because they were kind of loose on the times a little bit, which is kind of cool. It's like, all right, like. They're like, you can play a little bit. You can, you know, you don't have to stop right on time. You know, like we have a permit to like a certain time. So I was like, all right, we're going to stretch a little bit and just kind of lean into these songs. Because sometimes when you're playing, in my mind, it's like a showcase set where it's like, all right, we've got a show. We've got these tunes lined up. Sometimes it can feel a little like, all right, like here's a postage stamp. Next postage stamp. And it's like, tonight I was like, yeah, like my mom's house is like 6 blocks from here. And like, we're just jamming in the park and you all happen to be here. And the band is just, it's a great group of musicians, but a great group of people too. And anytime we get together is just so much fun. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like you had a good time. I know we in the audience did have a fabulous time. Have you played here recently?
I think the last time that we were here was a couple months back, maybe 3 months ago. We played at the La Joie Theater at the Cultural Center.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it's been a minute. And we were playing every song except for two were originals. So.
Oh. That was wow.
That's always the hill you have to climb as like a as somebody who writes their own music. It's like, well, can you get people to move to it?
Oh yeah, but they were moving. They were dancing. Mm-hmm. So, Michael, Mr. Yep. LeClaire, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you out here. I just wanted to get some footwork down with Mr. Rice here, who is now a co-friend of yours. And
yeah,
so
we go back a ways.
Yeah, take it away.
I don't even. How old were you when I engineered you at Carlton Fun Days? About 15?
This is how a band goes. Like, this is how the guitar player stands. All right, look, this is a saxophone solo. Okay, like, what's the rest of the band doing while the saxophone player solos, you know, and like all of that?
You've learned the lessons, my friend, because you got one of the tightest shows going and one of the most professional bands I've seen come out of Portland in a long time.
Ben, you also might want to talk about, just take a second and say who the Boomer Band really is.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I grew up in the kind of the Newburgh, Yamhill County area, and the Boomer Band initially for me was the band that always played the fireworks show before our town's fireworks show. And it was the whole football field was a dance party. And Michael was playing drums, and his wife was playing baritone saxophone. I think.
Is alto in those days.
Oh, alto in those. Okay.
And flute. Don't forget the flute.
Yeah, flutes too.
And I remember Lee Garrett was singing, and that was very cool.
He just turned 82 on the 30th.
Really?
Yeah, he called me up and he goes, I'm a millionaire. Because apparently Stevie sold his catalog to Sony, and Sony called Lee up and said, hey, you know, we're auditing this, and you haven't had royalties forever, and they had just put a check for $1 million in his account.
Wow.
Yeah, finally the man is getting some recognition.
Man.
I mean, you know, you write a tune that's covered by the Beatles, please Mr. Postman. You know, but,
and for those of you who don't know who Lee Garrett is, he is the co-writer with Stevie Wonder for Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I'm Yours.
So there's two.
And a bunch of other tunes, absolutely. And he used to rock the house for the Boomer Band. He was the front man.
Yep.
And he took it away.
So anyway, let's get some background on Ben Rice.
Absolutely.
Because Lee ain't here. He's in L.A. When did you start playing guitar?
Well, I first started playing guitar, I picked up my dad's guitar when I was 5. And he doesn't play, but he knows, like, oh, if I put my finger here, it sounds good. And if I put my finger here, it sounds good. And so that was enough for me to be, like, 5 years old and just be like, well, this is the guitar. And, like, what sounds can I make? And then my brothers started playing instruments of their own. I have a brother who plays drums and a brother who plays bass. And they'd rehearse in our living room, and I'd watch them rehearse and kind of bug them. And they'd kick me out, and I'd go run away, you know. And my dad kind of saw what was going on. And he's like, this is like when I was 6, he goes, I'm going to get you a guitar for your birthday. Your own guitar.
Wow.
So your brothers can't take it away from you anymore.
Are you the youngest?
No, I'm 3 of 4.
Oh, okay.
So, but then I got my own guitar when I was 7 years old, and my dad put me in guitar lessons, and he goes, I'll keep on paying for these lessons as long as you keep going. And I took lessons from 7 to 18, and then, you know, all those years. And then at 18 years old, graduated from high school, and my girlfriend at the time was like, what are you going to do after? She wasn't, you know, like, what are you going to do after high school? She goes, what school are you going to? Or, what college are you going to?
What college, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. Well, what do you want to study? I don't know. And then I found out you could study guitar in college. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, what? You can study this in college? Like, that sounds so much better than.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's what I did, you know. Luckily, my girlfriend at the time was like, hey, like, here's some direction. Go this way. And I got to study guitar at school. And my parents were like, okay, sure. I'm like.
So, okay, so I got to ask the question, Mr. Rice, Mr. Ben, how old are you today then, if you don't mind sharing?
Well, July 5th, the day we played the Waterfront last weekend was actually my 37th birthday.
Yeah. So you've been playing guitar for 30 years. Is that about right?
Wow. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I've known you for 20-something. Mm-hmm, I know,
right? Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the great thing about music is, you know, it's also, you know, it's not like always how long you've been playing, but like what you do with it too. And there's some wonderful players out there who've been playing for like a decade or 5 years that are just crushing too. So and they're all over, yeah, YouTube and Instagram. I've been playing guitar for...
So who are some of your inspirations?
Yeah, I'm a huge Carlos Santana fan. And And growing up, my parents always had music playing, George Benson. And, you know, when I was really young, I found Robert Cray and B.B. King, and my guitar teachers are turning me on to people like Eric Clapton, and all of a sudden, when I started growing older, I started to be like, well, who else is there? And I started to get into this thing where I'm like, who was before this? And so then I got into people like Robert Johnson and Son House and Mississippi Fred McDowell and the Delta Blues, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. And so like at like 14 years old, I'd be raiding at that time, Fred Myers had a CD collection. And they had a little blues and jazz bin that was maybe...
six CDs.
Yeah, six CDs. And so I'd save my money, and I was like, I could buy... This one's only $2.99. I can buy that one. All right, this one's $7.99. Okay, I got to save my money and get that one. And then this one's... Like, I had bought all the ones that were $5 and below. And it's like, all right, this one is $20. I got to save $20 to buy the CD. And at some point, I had all the CDs in the... in the Fred Meyer music bin. And I was like, well, there's no use now. I have all these CDs. So, but I, you know.
So I got to ask, is that where you learned how to play slide off of some of those CDs, I suppose?
Yeah, totally. Listen to Mississippi Fred McDowell and the Robert Johnson stuff.
Because your slide is excellent, man. I'm telling you, you're ripping when you're out there. And, of course, you got that guitar that looks like a washboard that your dad made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started playing slide guitar when everything in life was awkward. You know, like when you're like a teenager. So it's like, oh, yeah, this is awkward, but so is everything. So, you know, it just kind of began to become natural. You know, when I was 14 years old, eBay was like a big thing. And so I went on eBay. And I ordered a cigar box guitar off the internet. And at that point, I had a paper route. So I was getting like $20 a month for my paper route and saving that up to buy, you know, a Tascam 424, you know, a little recorder, tape recorder. And then I bought this guitar. And my dad saw this guitar and he's like, what'd you pay for that? Like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, Dad, it's a cigar box guitar. And he's like, why are you spending your money on this? And I'm like, Dad, it's like cigar box guitar. It's like an old blues thing. And he's like, I'm going to build you one of these. He's like, I'm going to build you a better one. I'm like, no. No, you're not. I'm like, no. Like, Dad, this is a musical instrument.
Absolutely.
Like, and so it took him about 6 tries, and he made one. I'm like, it's not great, but, like, yeah, totally. Like, I can make this work. This is, you know, it's cool. Like, it works. And then, like, the first show, somebody started asking me about it. I'm like, oh, my dad made it. And then my dad's like, I'll make you one. And they're like, well, how much? And my dad's like, $50. And the guy was like, what? That's it?
yeah, that's dirt cheap.
And then my dad was like, all right, Ben, I'll build like 5 of these. You play it and I'll sell them. And then I'll have beer drinking money for you for 1 year. And I'm like, all right. So that, you know, and he still makes them. He's an artist. It's funny, like, he's an artist. He'd never consider himself an artist, but like every guitar he makes, the cigar box guitar, or now he only makes washboard guitars out of washboard, they're all different. They're all a little ornate in certain ways too. And like, I'm like, Dad, you're an artist. He's like, I'm not an artist. I'm like, yeah, this is folk art, Dad. And he goes, some people call it art. I just like to drink beer and mess around in the garage. I'm like, Dad, that's exactly what art is. Like, that's exactly what art is. All kinds of art, you know, so.
Absolutely.
So you've played in Memphis, up and down the West Coast. Where else have you played?
I've gotten to travel and play a lot of music and meet a lot of wonderful people. For me, that's like the three wonderful things: the music, the people, and you get to travel. I got to go to Scotland.
Oh my!
And that was a wonderful trip. They set me up with, Michael, you'll appreciate this, they set me up with a local band. So it's like, not only are you traveling to a cool country, but you're hanging out with some of the coolest, most interesting people anywhere, the musicians. Like, they're also interesting in characters. And like, we had the bass player, they called Lord Kenny Potter. He's like, you're a lord. Well, like, yeah, because if you own land, you're a lord. But it's just like, what? Like, that's so funny that, you know, like a lord. And then I got to go to Colombia. I did a 6 shows in Colombia over the course of 8 days, which is wonderful. And like, yeah, you know, like, get to travel overseas. Yeah, it's funny, you know, like my first tour that wasn't my own was right out of college, playing with a harmonic player out of the Bay Area. And like, coming out of school, I was like, I got chops. I know how to play music. I know, you know, I'm like, I can play whatever, you know. I get to this first rehearsal and the harmonica player goes, all right, let's play this song. Let's play the Blue Light Boogie by Louis Jordan. I'm like, all right, great. Yeah, this one's in B flat. It's just the blues with the 2-5. Cool, you know. And we start playing and he turns around and he looks at me. Play the lick. I'm like, lick? What lick? You play the lick. Then I start singing. Okay, okay. The lick. What's the lick? So I play a lick and he goes, no, that's not the lick. Play the lick. And then he pulls out a phone and plays it for me. And it's this lick that happens twice in the song. Twice in the song. It's like 3 and a half minutes long. This lick happens twice. And this guy wants me to know that lick specifically here and here. And it's like, oh, that lick. Okay, yeah, I can play that. And I play it. And every song was like that. And it was like such a great lesson in like the details. The devil's in the details. Like, that's what you want. Anyways, so we did this run down to the Bay Area and up to Eastern Washington. And I remember we crossed this bridge. I think it's on 101. There's these 2 golden bears. And I remember thinking, we're like driving through the redwoods and I'm just like, this is so awesome. Like, I've never been down here. This is so cool, man. Like, I don't know the next time I may get to come down here, man. I hope I get to do it again. That was kind of like the catalyst for getting my own band down that way too. And it's like kind of like ironing out a shirt. It's like, all right, I've come down here. I know the lay of the land. I know some of the musicians. I know some of the venues. I know some of the people that, you know, I think of these as like little, you know, when you hike the Pacific Crest Trail, you have the trail angels. It's kind of like that when you're on the road, you have these people that are like, yeah, if when you're in town, like, come on over, we'll make dinner, you know, or we're definitely coming to your show and we're going to bring all of our friends, you know, or like, hey, you're coming down. I saw you coming down. There's this new venue. I'd love to show you. Great couple that just took it over and they turned it into like a British pub and like, that's the really cool.
So I have to ask, tonight you played a Spanish song, mm-hmm. and did it in Spanish,
yeah,
completely. Now, are you fluent in Spanish or did you teach yourself that song?
That's a very good question and people ask me a lot, and I need to come up with like a very concise explanation. So my mom, her first language was Spanish. She's from Texas.
Oh.
And I took, she never taught her kids how to speak Spanish, but we all took it in school. Like, she's like, you're not taking French, you're not taking German, you're taking something you can use. You're taking Spanish.
Absolutely.
So I took Spanish and I took it and I got it to where I was like, I'm almost fluent. But then also I started teaching an after school mariachi program at the Cultural Center.
Oh.
And that's when I really started to fall in love with mariachi music. And there's a lot of parallels with blues music too, in that it's, you know, started off in the country and then moved to the big city and you got homemade instruments. And you even have people that, like the Willie Dixon of mariachi music, Jose Alfredo Jimenez, who wrote all of these songs. And then you have like the Muddy Waters, Elvis B.B. King character, Vicente Fernandez, and all these other, you know, Javier Solis and Pedro Infante and so it's just like parallel. But I fell in love with this music while I was teaching these kids how to play these instruments. And this program was put together by the migrant program of the Newburgh School District, and they're like, we're trying to reach the migrant population and we want to get music to kids that normally wouldn't play music. And so during COVID, I was sitting at home and I was thinking about my students and how I missed them. And I was just like inspired by them. It's just like something really cool about watching just fearless kids. Like, here's the trumpet. This is how you hold it. This is how you blow. Or, here's the guitar on. Like, I know it's bigger than you are, but you can play it. I think you can, you know. And so I was playing outside. I was busking at a mall. And I was thinking about it and I was like, those students, you know, like, man, like, those songs are so good. And I was like, why don't I play one of those songs out here? You know, I've never really played them. I've only really sang them to the students to kind of teach them, but I really haven't really pursued it. And so I tried it, and it's busking. Nobody's really paying attention to it. So I did it again, and I'm like, oh, okay, like, I can do this. This is cool. And I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I speak enough of it to do that. And part of it's like, well, why not? Like, you can. Why not? It's some of the most gorgeous vocals anywhere. Like,
absolutely.
I don't do it any justice, but if you want to hear some really great singers, you know.
So we're about to play that cut.
Okay.
From today's event. If you wouldn't mind introducing the song, and give a people a little background about what it is, how you came about putting it in your set.
Totally, yeah. So this song is Volver y Volver, and it's like, come back, come back. I know things aren't great, but come back. You know, I love you, and I want to have you in these arms. Yeah, and I think it was written by Jose Alfredo Jimenez, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, here we go.
Este amor apasionado anda todo alborotado. Pero llegó el momento de pedir.
So, Ben, you are the genius behind the PDX hustle. I've seen you over the years in many different outfits, of which you've always been the front man. You have a unique voice. Few people stand out in my mind. Michael McDonald. When you hear Michael McDonald sing, you know it's Michael McDonald. Well, I feel the same way about you and your voice. What it was the inspiration to put together the PDX hustle?
Yeah, so it's definitely coming out of COVID, where it was a really good pause for me, where just like, all right, stop the race, you know, the rat race. It's like, now you have all the time in the world to write, to think about stuff. Like, you know, I was talking to a mentor friend of mine out of Nashville, and he was like, I'm trying to get my head wrapped around you and your music. And he's like, it sounds like you should have horns. It sounds like you should have a B3 organ. Like, why don't you? Oh man, like, I'd love to, but I don't know if I could write horn parts. That's a lot of people too. Like, I can barely get, at that time I was in a tree. I'm like, I can barely get three people moving in the same direction. And he goes, why don't you do that? Would you do that for me? Would you just try it for a little bit? And so I took that whole fall, and I got together with Dave Mills, who does
Dave,
great arranger, great guy, great trumpet player. I got together with Dave Mills. I was playing with Curtis Salgado. Curtis, like, hey Ben, will you stay after rehearsal today? I'm gonna get together with Dave Mills. I need somebody to just play chords for us while we're work out these horn charts. And I watched Curtis and Dave Mills write horn charts together.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I could do that. Like, I totally could do that. Like, that's so cool. Like, you think it's some cool secret thing where you're like spending, like, slaving over, you know, the staffs, you know, staff paper. No, it's literally just, here's an idea. What do you think? You know, how about just try this here? You know, hey Ben, why don't you copy this chord? I was like, I can do that. So I was like, hey Dave, would you want to come over? I've got about 12 tunes I'm looking to add horns to. And he was sweetheart of a guy, and just still is. And he's like, yeah, we could do that. And so him and I got together and worked up these horn charts. And then Pat McDougall had already been kind of playing with us a little bit. And so I said, Pat, he plays keyboards. I go, Pat, I'm going to add, this is what the vision is. I'm going to add horns. I'm going to add you. I want to have, you know, this is the new rehearsal routine. I've got tunes. I've got, you know, and it just turned into like the coolest thing, where I was really nervous about having more people, but it turns out that adding more musicians only makes it a lot more fun. You know, everybody's
gotta
so
have horns.
Yeah, totally.
And a Hammond.
I mean, yeah, no, right, totally.
Yeah, you know, I hired Dave Mills for his first gig he ever did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was whenever we could beat up the club owners to pay enough to have a horn section. Dave was the trumpet player in a band called Slow Train that I was managing at the time, and. Yeah, Jim Pepper was the tenor sax.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And Gary Harris was alto sax.
Gary.
And so, yeah, I go way back with those guys.
Those are good old days, too.
Mills is one of the best, for sure.
So, not to get off Ben here for a second, but Michael, why don't you tell the audience what your past experience in the music industry has been? Because I'm sure there are people that, like Ben, who actually know part of it, but nobody ever knows
all
of it.
I'm still learning.
So tell us.
I started playing drum lessons in third grade. Then I moved to Oregon, and I got a job at a place called Headwater Booking Agency. And I was booking a band called Brown Sugar, which we've already talked about, Lloyd Jones, and he was a drummer in those days, and a few other bands. And for over the years, I started my own agency and started doing sound and managing one band. And we hit the wall, had one of the best bands ever, Slow Train, and we had Danny Wilson from Jeff Lorber's band on bass, and Doug Lewis out of Pleasure on guitar. It's just a Linda Hornbuckle. If you ever have been in Portland, you know the name Linda Hornbuckle. We were on the road together for a couple years, and Lee Garrett was in that band too. And so I just quit because everything just blew apart. And the veterinarian in Carleton, who was the president of the Chamber of Commerce, put together a 50s band for Carleton Fun Days. And he came up to me and said, man, we don't have any gear. So I lined up all the gear in a PA for him. Almost 30 years later, it was supposed to be one gig. And we went through a number of personnel. And
That's with the Boomer Band.
The Boomer Band.
Yeah.
Featuring the legendary Boomettes.
Absolutely.
With Lee Garrett.
Lee Garrett.
And then we formed Little Queenie with Steve Bradley, is another Portland guitar. And it was funny, when you were talking about Mills doing the horns, when Bradley was in the band, he'd look at, and we had a Cracker Jack horn section. Dave Mitchell on trumpet, and one of the most soulful tenor sax players Portland's ever produced, Danny Fincher.
Oh, yeah, Danny.
And we played together for about 10 years, but Bradley was the first guitar player for about 2 years. And he'd look at the horn players and go, you guys... do some of that horny stuff.
So let's get back to Ben. I'm going to play another cut from today's event, and we'll be right back.
See what's really going on. Oh, you're looking eyes at me, waiting for somebody else. Oh, I know you're making eyes at me, waiting for somebody else. Wait a minute. Feels like I'm just stealing kisses. Wasting the night time, I know that you're in my arms. Girl, I can see that you got somebody else on your mind. Oh, I know you're making eyes at me for somebody else. Oh, I know you're making eyes at me for somebody else. Till the morning light comes shining through, you and I don't have to worry. When it's time to say it, you're making eyes at me for somebody else. Oh, I know you're making eyes at me for somebody else. This soul thing going on, this classic soul here. Yeah. Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me. Love was hard. history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world it would be. Well, let me tell you about a place. Somewhere in the Newburgh way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Man, you ought to see them go. How we got there, I don't know. But man, you're finally young and old. I think we gotta kick it up a notch. Let's kick it up one more notch. One more notch.
Here we go.
One, two, three, four. We're having a party. Sing to the music played by the DJ. On the radio, the Cubs are in the icebox. Popcorn on the table. Me and my baby are rocking on the floor. That's right down here. So let me tell you, Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, cause I'm having such a good time, dancing with my baby. Everybody swing, South is doing that twist now. If you take a quest out, what a song to do. So let me tell you, Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, cause I'm having
You are listening to an interview with Ben Rice and the PDX Hustle, recorded live July 8th, 2025, at the Newburgh Tunes on Tuesday event.
So one of the outfits I've seen you play with that had a great horn player that's been a friend of mine. We met, he hired the Boomer Band one time, Paul Biondi. So you go off on Paul for a minute here.
Yeah, Paul is, gosh, I think he's from somewhere back east.
He's from Philly.
From Philly. And I met Paul when I was going to school at U of O. He was, I got hired to sing, be the singer at a jam session. Every Wednesday night. And that was kind of a funny moment for me, because when I was 12 years old singing for my blues band, somebody was like, hey, I heard you're singing, and well, I couldn't really hear you, but what I could hear sounded good. You should just keep on singing. Keep on singing loud, and like, people are going to say, hey, like, get a singer for your band, you know, like, and but don't listen, like, just keep on singing. And so that happened, and that person was right. It's like, sing all the way through high school. Everybody's like, you need a singer for your band. Like, you should have this person sing or this person sing. Anyways, so when I was in college, I got asked to be the singer at a blues fest or at a blues jam. And I was like, oh my gosh, that guy was right. And so I was there the first night of this new gig. This is the new singer for the blues jam. And the band was like five people deep, like two guitar players, including, in addition to me, a bass, drums, keyboards, two horn players. And we're playing, and the sax player plays a riff, and I play the riff back to the sax player. And then he plays another riff, and I play the riff back to the sax. And we're not even looking at each other. We're just listening across the band intently.
Isn't that amazing?
And then I look over, and him and I are looking at each other, and everybody else is just standing with their eyes closed, just kind of out in their own world. Paul and I are having this musical conversation, and I'm like, who's this guy? Like, this guy's really good. And then he starts playing two saxophones at once. And I'm like, wait, what?
It's like, how does he do that?
Yeah. I'm like, what's in the water here? What's going on? And so that was like the beginning of a friendship. And he did that jam with us for a long time. And then I started to gig down in Eugene, and he's like, hey, Ben, I see you're playing down here. Why don't, if you need a saxophone player, you know, give me a call. And so I started having him play with us, and it quickly turned into, oh, I'm not only hiring this guy because he's a great saxophone player, I'm hiring this guy because he is the most professional person I've met. And it's like, pay attention to that guy. What is he doing? Like, what time is he getting to the show? What time, like, what is he wearing at the show? How is he talking to the audience? How, what is he doing between sets? Like, all the, like, his playing was fantastic. He could play two horns at once, but also everything in the sphere of Paul Biondi is like, this is one of those person, like, lifers. I call them lifers. People that just live and breathe it. And so Paul would actually drive up from Eugene to play with me up north too, and we did some stuff in Idaho and Eastern Oregon.
Fabulous.
And people had never seen him play before. We're just like, where'd you find that guy? Like, that guy's, and he's still playing down in Eugene and he keeps a full calendar, as he should.
Yeah. So just a little background on Paul Biondi. He hired the Boomer Band to come down to Florence for the Blues Brews and Chowder Fest. So we're in this room with about 4,000 people, and we're playing, and he came up and asked if he could sit in, and we always had people sit in. And Lee came up to me, and Lee being blind, he didn't recognize him. He goes, Biondi, I know this name from somewhere. I said, I don't know. He hired us. He says he wants to sit in. So he sat in, and like you say, just blew everyone away playing two horns at once. Lee got on stage and goes, Biondi, I remember you now. Mm-hmm. When I was doing radio in Philadelphia, you were playing with the Righteous Brothers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And when I was out with Stevie opening for the Rolling Stones, you were playing with Ike and Tina Turner opening for us. And remember so-and-so studio? And Biondi looks at me, he goes, man, he remembers more than I do.
And I just want to say, I have met Paul several times at several events that I've done for the Boomer Band way back in the day. And he is the nicest, most real person I have ever met in my entire life.
Straight up.
He is straight up. So I want to give a shout out to Paul Miani, because this is actually being simulcast on our transmitter in Corvallis, Oregon.
Oh, hey.
So come on, Paul. We hear you, bud. Yeah. And we're trying to talk about you here. So,
Mr. Ice, you'll always be Ben to me.
Right, I think I'll always be Ben to me, too.
Who were your, some of your teachers that you were talking about?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, so... I first started guitar lessons. My teacher was out of Newberg Music. It was this guitar player named Aaron Knutson, fantastic guitar player. And then he ended up leaving and going to U of O to get a degree in music. But he was a great inspiration. At that time, I had started playing with my brother's hard rock band. And so he kind of helped me out with those songs and show me cool ways to play songs. And then he'd come out to shows too and watch us play, which was really cool. And then after that, I started going to guitar lessons out in Wilsonville at a place called Music Man Studios. I'm not sure if it's there anymore, but I had this great teacher named Greg Stipkala. And he kind of filled in all of the cracks. Like from Aaron, I learned how to solo and just like the wonders of jamming and, you know, like shredding. But scales and arpeggios. And then Greg was like, showed me like, oh, these are chords. Like, this is like how you play chords and songs. And Greg was also a fantastic player. But he was a fantastic teacher. And he was one of those first teachers I had. Was like, a really great teacher is somebody who makes you want to learn. But it really shaped how I approached teaching later on when I became a teacher. And then after Greg, I ended up going to U of O, and I took a year with Don Latarsky in like that first lesson. Yeah. Don Latarsky plays fingerstyle, and he writes those books like, here's 10,000 guitar chords every guitar should know, or here's 10,000 arpeggios, or 10,000 triads. And I left the first lesson just thinking, man. And now it's like there's so much to learn. Like how, like, it's never ending. Like
every day.
Every, yeah. It's like, how wonderful is that? Like, you'll never reach the end, because you'll just keep on. It just goes on forever, which is wonderful. And then after Don, I started taking lessons from Mike Denny. This is the way to do it. And for me, that really helped me have some direction in what I was doing. It's like, all right, I know from Don that there's a million ways to do this. I know from Mike Denny that this is a really good way to do it, and this is really helpful. And you know, and at that age, you know, when you're a teenager and like you're in your late teens, early 20s, you know, to have somebody who's helping you through something like music and guitar, the in and out, like art is life is art, you know, and to have somebody who's just like kind of pushing you, like, go this way.
So tonight in your show, you ended with a Stevie Wonder tune. Mm-hmm. There was some Sam Cooke in there.
Some Sam Cooke, yep.
What's the percentage of Ben Rice originals in your show?
It is probably 90%, if not more. It depends on, you know, it depends on the show. But tonight we played, two covers. I guess we did a little Sam Cooke medley that I might have stolen from watching the guitar player, Steve?
Brian.
Brian.
Yeah.
Brian. Were we talking about Brian Hoyt?
Yeah, in the Boomer Band?
Because he's saying...
Oh, my God.
Twisting the Night Away.
Twisting the Night Away. Oh, killer version, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, we did a little Sam Cooke medley where I just kind of sing all the Sam... I stole this from the old blues guys. They just get up there and they just sing all the old blues chestnuts in one go. And then it's like, well, what else? What other songs is anybody else going to play? You just sang them all. So I do that with Sam Cooke at the end of a song that I wrote called Making Eyes that is really heavily inspired by Sam Cooke. And then Volver, which we listened to earlier.
Absolutely.
And I'm trying to work some more of that stuff in there, too. I would love to just like, now this next 20 minutes is all in Spanish. Why?
Because I can.
Because we can. And because we should. Because we should.
We're going to take another break here, and we're going to play another Ben Rice song.
One, two, three, four. I'm still here after the hurting. I'm still here atoning my old ways. I'm still here counting counting my blessings. One day at a time. Never gonna be easy trudging along. The promise of tomorrow without the dawn. I'm standing tall on my own misgivings. And I'm broken, I'm fighting to right my wrongs. Soldiers in my army, fighting battles, though you're not alone. Color your friendships, receive the grace. Love I got so long before I'm moving on. Slates.
So back to the Ben Rice song list. What name would you put on your music?
That's a good question. It's like Americana ADHD. You know? It's like, all right, like we're going to do some down home blues. We start off with this really down home shuffle. And I just kind of feel like Elmore James or Hound Dog Taylor. He's like, all right, don't. And then you know, a little bit of like a Johnny Cash inspired, you know, early 50s rock and roll inspired thing. But I love the soul ballads. You know, I grew up listening to Al Green and the Isley Brothers. And
you like Zydeco too, I imagine.
Zydeco, yeah. Zydeco. Yeah, I like it all. I really, my listening, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I've always loved the music they bring to the Blues Festival, and some of the music I've gotten really turned on to is because I saw them at the festival. And
absolutely.
There's this great guitar player from Zimbabwe that they had, maybe, gosh, I guess 2014, Oliver Tukutsi. And that is like his sound, there's moments where I'm like, all right, I'm just trying to play this Chimarenga stuff. Like I'm just trying to play the style of like Eastern African guitar where it's just like really syncopated and everything's got like a triplet feel, but like it's all in there. I think anything you listen to kind of comes out. And I think also, you know, like growing up would go see bands play, and my parents, you know, like the most critical. It's like, did this band just play this song? And I'm like, well, yeah, like, all right, you know, like that's a good point. Like, keep it different. Keep it, you know, it's like you're changing the stations on the radio. It's
oh,
like,
absolutely. Like, yeah. Well, Ben, we're come to the end of the show. I want to thank you so much for the interview, the songs today at your live event here in Newburgh, and for what you do, because you are a professional. And I certainly appreciate it. Michael LeClaire. Yeah,
always a pleasure to see you, Ben.
Likewise, Michael. Likewise.
You're jamming. Your band's killing it. Thanks, and people, if you haven't seen them, go see Ben Rice in the PDX Hustle.
Absolutely.
You will not be disappointed.
Absolutely. So that concludes our broadcast of the pre-recorded interview with Ben Rice and the PDX Hustle. For all of us here at Portland Music Insider, we hope you've enjoyed our very first episode broadcast. It is our intention from this point on to have live interviews with many outstanding Portland musicians. If you've enjoyed this broadcast of Portland Music Insider, do reach out to KBOO by phone, email, or other means to let them know that you enjoyed this program and would like it to continue. Remember, KBOO is a listener-supported station, and your membership donation directly helps keep independent radio like KBOO on the air. Donate online at kboo.fm/donate